Welcome. We seem to have a very well-attended meeting. Number one is just scroll past. Hang on. Everything you're scrolling past the agenda. Thank you. So the next item on the agenda is something that Eberhard has submitted, who wants to have a discussion about the House rules on how best to conduct our business over the coming weeks. Eberhard, would you like to speak to that?
Thank you. One thing, like, I would like to start on time so that we can finish on time. I would like to make sure that people who are on the bridge and who are not on the Adobe Connect get recognized so that they can participate equally. And that leads me to the main point that we should, like we have done in the FOI, use the Adobe Connect raising of the hand tool strictly to get the word. What I didn't like at the CCWG was that during some parts, some process of the procedures, they attempted to change the rules of deliberation. The one what we usually have been doing, everybody can talk as often and as much as they want. If that doesn't work, we have to find out a way of bringing some order in. I would not like to change this during a call, but we should have, if that happens, a stepwise approach, for example, allowing everybody only to speak once per topic, like the Roberts rule of orders. If that doesn't work, once with a time limit and so on. What I do not want is that we change the rules inside a call or inside a meeting, that we only do it on the next meeting. And personally, I would not like to have to go to any of this, but we should have a plan beforehand so that there is no surprises and later nobody complains that we're changing the rules while we go along.
Thank you, Eberhard. I'm going to open the floor now for any comments to that. I will just say that we'll impose our own Roberts Rules of Order. If anybody starts to get a bit long-winded, I will gently point that out. But it's a very good point. Has anybody got any comments on what Eberhard has just said?
Michele has his hand up, Nigel.
I see that. Michele, go ahead.
Thanks, Nigel. Michele, for the record. I don't have any issue with anything that that Eberhard said. I mean, the other obvious things is just, you know, use a bit of common sense. If you're not speaking, keep your phone on mute. I really don't need to listen to hear all your bodily functions or the traffic going past your front door or whatever is going on around you. I don't think anybody else does. The Adobe Connect thing, works pretty well for managing queues. I'm well used to that. I'm not familiar with the Roberts order thing, but it seems perfectly reasonable. And his points about changing rules of engagement on the fly, again, seems perfectly valid. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Michele. Before I pass to see if anybody else wants to make a comment to what Michele or Eberhard has said? Don't see any hands, but I need to scroll up now to make sure I'm not missing any. Just for the record, Roberts Rules of Order was adopted officially by ICANN in 1999 as being the rules by which all of the DNSO, as it then was, now the GNSO and the CCNSO, should be operating. They're pretty complex, they're pretty onerous, and they're designed really, they're kind of like rules of parliamentary procedure. In the previous two related working groups we've had, we haven't needed that. We had a good chairman, Keith Davidson, who I'm going to do my best to emulate, and if I fall down on the job, I'm sure my vice chairman will correct me. So thank you both for that. Were there any more comments on the House rules? Hearing silence, we'll move on to item 3 on the agenda, which is the fact that the public comment period has closed and an update on the subject of GAC opinions. And I believe that must be you, Bart. Is that correct?
Yes, just for the record, Nigel, this is Matt. I think we need to revisit the rules, say, for the second reading in the next meeting or over the email, but we'll send it around with the notes. Rhea, can you change the documents, what I send you? This is just to recap, say this is agenda point 3. It's just to recap and to avoid surprises on the public comment period, comments received. There is only one, and I've circulated this on the 13th of July, so a week ago, and this is from Vadim Mikhailov around .su. He made a comment on the issues report. Vadim will join this working group. He's already an observer, and he asked, as it's still a CCTLD, to become a member of the group, so we'll join the group after today's council call as a member. The second document, Eberhard, you got your hand up?
Can we please, when we put a document up, always make it scrollable and make it that we can increase the size? For me, it's a bit small to read, and if you use it on the laptop, you can't read this particular document at all.
It is. You can scroll yourself now. I just changed the settings. So.
I just wanted to mention this, that we pay attention to this when we put up documents, because it's difficult to read sometimes. Thank you.
Yeah. And Jochen, could you note this in the rules as well? So as of now, all documents will be, everybody can scroll these documents, so that's a no-brainer. So it's also your own responsibility to keep track of where we are in the discussion with respect to the documents. The second, say, point was the GAC opinion or advice on the issue report of the CCPDP. If you scroll to the bottom of this document, you can see that Katrina Sataki, the chair of the CCNSO, has invited the GAC, or a formal request based on the NXB, to advise or provide an opinion on the issues report, because, yeah, that's part of the process. At some point, say in the 6th of June, the GAC responded, including a note that said they didn't receive an invite, but they acknowledged they did receive an invite, so that was a bit of miscommunication. And on the 20th of June, this was forwarded to the PDP Working Group on Retirement, so to you. So you can take this into your considerations of the topic as well. So this is just for the record that the GAC was asked for an opinion or advice on the issue report, and that it provided such directly to the CCNSO Council for Annex B, and this has been forwarded to you to take into account. These were just the 2 points on this topic, Nigel. So back to you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much, Bart. A couple of things. If we'd had 50 responses, I wouldn't be suggesting this, but what I would suggest is that perhaps you might write personally to the one person who took the time and trouble to put in a response to the public comment and thank him particularly for his input. And similarly, if we could just do a short note to the GAC, thanking them for their input, which is helpful, and perhaps encouraging them to take an active participation, or at least a watching brief throughout our deliberations.
Nigel, this is Bart. With respect to both points, there was a discussion already in the, say, during the Johannesburg, to again invite them, and Katrina sent her thanks to Thomas regarding the comments, etc. Just for the record, and with respect to Vadim, I think I did send him a reply, and he is aware that he will be appointed member shortly.
Okay, well, we look forward to his input. Give me 1 second to scroll back up to where we are. I think, unless there are any comments, That will deal with agenda item 3. Do we have any comments? Hearing nothing, perhaps we can see the agenda again, please. Okay, item number 4, we're getting a little bit more into the meat and the substance of this. The rules, I presume that's of of ISO 3166 with respect to assignment and deletion of names. Bart, is that something you want to introduce?
Yes, I will. Eberhard has his hand up. Eberhard?
I wonder, can the Secretariat purchase the rules from the ISO agency and make it available to all members?
Let me check into it. I got a set for myself. I don't know whether it's for working groups available, but let me check with the ISO Secretariat whether that's feasible, doable. So that's an action I will take on.
Okay, but you presumably had more to say on the subject.
Yes, I do. So, Ria, can you change the document, please, to the... So what I've done, and I've circulated this early this week to you, what I've done, and thanks again to Alan McGillivray, who took a first stab at this, following the presentation from YAP in Johannesburg, I looked into the rules themselves of ISO 3166. So I've copied them. And say the first bit, and to provide a framework, and this is part of the discussion online as well, is... the first step is the requirement to be listed on the ISO 3166 in the ISO 3166 standard. It goes back to RFC 1591. So there is a direct quote from RFC 1591 and it shows you the structure a little bit. If you would scroll down, say it's the rights to names, that's the section, and then item 2 or section 2 of rights to names, it I think is one of the core principles that was codified at the time in IOC 5091, and that's what I think is also the core of this working group. It's around the use of ISO 3166 as a basis for country code top-level domains, and again, these were just some questions I had looking at this quote, and recall this is a quote from, I believe, 1994, 1995, and at the time I didn't know, I didn't look into which list was referred to, but by now, and you could see this on the email traffic, there are several lists. And so it's, first of all, that the first question I had was which list is meant with respect to this quote from RFC 1591, and are there other lists in the sense of under ISO 3166R? And the second question, because that's, yeah, go ahead.
I actually just recently looked at all and the change on what information they have. I can see which one, I can try to find which one was the entire thing came out.
Yeah, unfortunately your line is very bad. Could you type it please in the chat room?
Thank
You're very hard to hear. It's not you, it's the line itself. So, yeah, go ahead. It's still very bad, yeah. Could you try to type it? I think, Gab, that would be a good exercise. So we know, say, about the evolution, because you can already see there is a bit of interpretation going on with respect to the use or which list was referred to. So we can at least include this in the observations of the working group. But so which list is meant? That was one of my questions. And then the second one is, which process or what is the process for removal, deletion of names to the list. So if you would scroll down, you can see there are which list is meant in, and it assumes 3166 part one is, but within part one, you can already see there is a list called the list of country names and their code elements, and that's the full name, so according to the clause 9, and effectively that is, as you will see in a footnote, it is currently the online database maintained by the maintenance agency, and that's publicly available. However, and that's already noted as well, say there are some I wouldn't call this, maybe you should call this lists, but at least other categories of codes, say like the exceptionally reserved code, the transitionally reserved code, and the indeterminately reserved code. And these are also included in a kind of list-like manner. So the starting point for the maintenance agency as well, if I understand it correctly, is the list of country names and their code elements as defined in Clause 6. And if you would have a paper version that's, say, Clause 9, but it's also the assigned codes list in the database. So that's included in the footnotes. So that's one with respect to the lists. Now, what is probably for this working group at this stage just as relevant, maybe even more important, is how are names added and removed, and particularly removed from the list of names of country and country subdivisions, so the territories. And again, there is a role of the maintenance agency defined in the standard itself in clause 7.1, and this is a verbal quote from it or copy. And then this refers, say the role of the maintenance agency is to add and eliminate country and country subdivisions names in accordance with the rules in ISO 3166, and these rules are further defined in section 7.2, which is included, and in 7.3, so that's 7.2 is about the addition of country and names as defined in ISO 3166 to the list, and the 7.3 is on the deletion and of country names to the list. What is relevant is as well is the country names, etc. This is just a quote, just an indication, so it's not part of the rules. The text starting with country names might be removed for various reasons. It's just an indication. This text, say, deletion 7.3 up till 1974, that is a direct quote from the rules, etc. Then what is related, and this is where it's the confusion starts probably, is not all CCTL or country codes are included in the country names, etc. There are some lists, quote unquote, to paraphrase, which say around the reservation of code elements which are used as CCTLD. So, and there is a there are sections in ISO 3166 standards, so in section 7.5 and further, around the reservation of codes. And one of the questions that came up during the Johannesburg meeting was, for example, the duration of the reservation period. And say there is this rule for a limited period of time, but say, as you can see, it could be at least 50 years after the change. But I want to point out, and I think this is very important as well, as Jaap pointed out, this is not a hard obligation. This is different language than used in the, say, the deletion or adding of names. This is language is, I don't know, say my English, this is where my English lacks. This is the terminology is should, and in the standard rules itself, 7.2 and 7.3, it talks about shall. So I've noted this in the document as well. So, as a few notes, and then there is some. So the terminology used is different with respect to the reservation than it is with adding and deleting name country names from the list of country names. So there are and then there is a summary. That's all I had with respect to, and that was a question from the previous working group meeting in the face-to-face to get back to you with some clarification around the rules used by the ISO 3166 MA. So back to you, Nigel.
Yeah, thank you, Bart. So any comments on that from the group? Eberhard, your hand is up. Go ahead.
It would be interesting to know when these 50 years were introduced. It can well be that .cs was the cause of introducing this. And we also need to know whether after the introduction of the 50 years they have kept to it or not. It can be that we are speculating here, and I would like to know what the actual situation is, because we don't need to second guess how they do their work. We just need to be concerned on the outcome.
Yeah, thank you, Eberhard. Jaap, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Yes, Jaap here, and I hope you can hear me now.
This is now very well. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, because that reminds me. Okay, the 50 years got indeed introduced after the problems with CS, and which was, I forgot the date exactly, and in 2000, 2008 there came a reinterpretation that actually said that the 50 years will start on the moment the code got deassigned. So it's also backwards to for instance, all other countries, which like East Germany, things like that. So that's I can check the complete. We did some. I could check the archive to see exactly when it is. But this, I want to make this one complete in the 50 years. I mean, this is the intention. It doesn't mean that it will always be completely go those 50 years. I mean, there have been codes quite recently. I think the one from St. Maarten was the one, SX was the one, which actually didn't have this 50 years period. It was actually reusing an old code within the 50 years period, but nobody complained. So there's been more cases like that. So the idea is to do this 50 years after the retirement, but it can be shortened when needed.
Yeah, thank you, Jaap. I noticed, Bart, you've got your hand up.
Yes, that's what I wanted to express. Say, this is the point Jaap raises. That's what I wanted to express. If you just look at the difference in language around the rules, around the reservation of codes. In the reservation, it's more in the reservation language, it's more an aspiration. It is not an obligation, not mandatory. The rules around the adding and deleting of names is far stronger, so that's almost mandatory for the MA.
Bart, this is Nigel, if I may participate as opposed to chairing in response to that. This is where, to some extent, we are going to get into statutory construction techniques here, the appropriate uses of the words shall, should, and so on, or may. Should is a lot stronger than a mere aspiration. You will normally do this unless there is an extremely good reason why not, is what it means. But shall, as you correctly say, means mandatory. You must do this. So perhaps at some point we might seek some form of clarification from ISO, but given again the background that we had in Johannesburg, which was very helpful from Jaap, I suspect that the MA sometimes does different things at different times in its life, just the way ICANN has done that. So I'm not sure to what extent that will be add more clarity, or it might add more murkiness, but it might be something that we might want to do. Jaap, is that an old hand or a new hand?
That's a new hand.
Okay, well, then you have the floor.
I just wanted to comment on the fact that the secretariat of the MA has been for the last 15 years in non-native English speakers, so the subtleties between shall and should might have been lost in the time that they wrote this stuff. It's now, the secretariat is now done in-house in ISO, but it is also done by DIN in Germany, it's been done in France, so there is a lot of, I guess we should be careful in the interpretation of shall and should in this respect.
Yeah, thank you, Jaap. And in fact, I remember corresponding with DIN in Berlin in 1996 about some codes or other, but we'll leave that to the annals of history. Do we have any more comments on item four or any questions for any of the previous speakers? I'm seeing no hands. Wait a minute, Bart, your hand is up. Is that a new hand?
Yeah. Just one suggestion for the group, say, moving forward, and you could say following the discussion online,
and in the chat as well, and what we're doing right now. Maybe as a general principle, that as soon as we're talking about interpretation of ISO 3166, that we defer to YAP and or to the ISO Secretariat to avoid discussing and second-hand guessing.
I think that's a very sensible comment. Eberhard, your hand is up.
I not only agree with this, I think we should avoid interpreting at all. We should take the output as it comes. We should maybe ask for clarification, for example, as far as the time frame is concerned, so that it becomes predictable, but we should only be concerned if what we're getting, not how they produce it and what's internal and language and semantics and stuff that only native speakers really understand. For us, we really only need to know what are we going to do if that this and this happens. We don't really concern ourselves how ISO does its work.
Yeah, good points. Any more comments? Discussion? Michele.
Thanks, Nigel. Michele for the record. Just this thing about the should and the must and all that. I mean, it's basically modal verbs and all that. I wouldn't want us to get bogged down in that right now. I mean, if when it comes to drafting actual policies and documents, then that's where you would get into that choice of words. I don't think it's going to help us at this juncture to start kind of beating people up over the head if they misuse a modal verb. Thanks.
Yep, thank you, Michele. I think the reason this discussion came up was that Bart was suggesting that part of the ISO rules was, should we say, more aspirational and less mandatory, and that's where that discussion came from. But Eberhard's right, we shouldn't be trying to second-guess the ISO. We just look at their output. But if we're going to have to write a policy that meshes with it, it needs to be predictable. I'm looking for any more hands. Do we have any wrap-up actions on item 4? Is there anything that we need to, Bart, say before we move on to item 5?
As I said, I will try to check whether the working group could have a copy of the of the rules, or whether they need to be purchased individually.
Yeah, so that would be very helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Bart. Well, with that, I think then we've come to the conclusion of item 4 on our agenda. Item 5, which I'm not quite sure what topic list retirement means, but I think it's a bit after the colon that's important, additional topics to be included. Is that right, Bart?
Yes, Ria, could you change the document? So what I'm referring to, and this is again to, I'll make it scrollable again for you. If you recall, and this is, some of you were on the drafting team for the charters of the two working groups. And as a starting point, the Secretariat prepared an issues list to explore and define with respect to the retirement of CCTLDs, and we've done the same with respect to the review mechanism. This was presented to the CCTLDs, I believe, in Hyderabad, and afterwards again in Copenhagen, looking at the in a more summarized format. What it captures is, the cases to date and the language terminology used, so it's more a factual background. I'm scrolling down. Again, the quotation that was included in the previous note as well around country news, why they could be resolved, and based on this, a kind of overview, and this is just tentative, but at least something that to start the discussion of the working group, high-level overview of the issues pertaining to the retirement of CCTLDs. And again, this is just the Secretariat's view. It was limited in the charter review because the thought was it's up to the working group to decide what they want. This is just to trigger some of the initial discussion, say, around the work items for the group and around the, say, where to start, so setting the priority. So I'll run through the level of or the items again. So one thing that was observed is there is not, say, the consistency of terminology. You can see it in the summary of cases as presented in the document. What triggers retirement, who triggers retirement, additional conditions. This alludes a little bit to the questions raised and topics raised by Kim. Eberhard, you got your hand up?
No, I don't want to interrupt you. Finish what you're saying.
Okay, thank you. The conditionally of to a delegation of subsequent CCTLDs, if you would look at the IANA reports on the retirement of .YU and the retirement of .AIN, they were part of the conditions for the retirement, and the actions by the CCTLD manager at the time were part of the requirements for delegation of CWG and of RS. And then flowing from this, some questions that we say with respect to compliance, and this is the related issues is more some background information and maybe for further discussion at some point. This was more around, say, unclarity because of the terminology and because of evolving use of ISO 3166, what was precisely meant at the time. So this could be something that, for a framework of interpretation working group too, if the working group considers this relevant. It's not directly related to the work of the of this working group. So that was just a list of overview. I thought I'd share it again with you. Some of you have seen it. It was in the background material in preparation of this working group. I see some questions. Back to you, Nigel.
Okay, thank you. Well, I have two hands up so far. Feel free, anybody else, if you have some comments or questions on what we've just heard. Eberhard was obviously first, and then Stephen after Eberhard.
Thank you. When I raise my hand, that does never means I'm trying to interrupt. I would always like somebody to finish, but I just want to get into the queue. I have a problem with the terminology here. On introduction and background, it says the recorded cases to date up are UM undelegation. We can't, besides the typing error on recorded, it's not an undelegation, it's a revocation. We should, at least in our own document, please be consistent with the terminology that the FOI working group developed. I'm not saying we have to rewrite documents that were written before, but in our own documents, we should not use words like undelegated when the word revocation is the one that we agreed upon. And then with regards to the .AN case, I recall that at the end of the period that they had, there were still a number of domain names allocated that were having problems, and they asked for another extension, which they didn't get. I'm not trying to be critical in any way. I'm just pointing out that this is the thing that we want to prevent from happening, when the deadline comes, that then nobody gets left in between and has to scramble to do.
Nigel,
May I
respond?
Yes, of course. Go ahead. I just want to make sure Eberhard had finished first of all. Carry on.
And with respect to undelegated, I do understand your comment. It's the undelegated was used in the case of .um. It was done with the approval of both the CCTLD manager and IANA at the time. And so I don't see how this could be a revocation. It's not the revocation of the manager. It was done with consent, and it was removed from the, as far as I recall, but I'm not sure, from the root zone itself. That's why, because it's an undescribed, and this is the terminology used in, say, in the IANA report, whether that's, and in the DRD working group report. That's to capture, as you can see, the difference. So what I tried to capture in this document is just the language used at the time and the difference in terminology. And I do understand your point, Eberhard, but this is, you can't put on words retroactively on the language that was used at the time. So this is just a description. That was the only comment I wanted to make.
Okay, Bart. Thank you. I see that Stephen has put his hand down and comments in the chat that Eberhard made my point regarding terminology. But I see Eberhard's put his hand up again, so I think he wants to come back and have further discussion on that. So, Eberhard, you have the floor.
I have the FOI document in front of me, and I don't want to quote for it, but this is a revocation. The revocation does not depend on consent. The mechanism is called revocation. I do not mind that it was called an undelegation when it happened, but when we refer to it, we should refer to it, to all the things, to everything under current terminology. My recollection of the consent in this case is in any way slightly different, but that's beside the point. I was only making the point that in our own documents that we produce, where we refer to things that happened, we should use current terminology. I'm not saying we should change the terminology that was used in previous documents.
Yeah, thank you, Eberhard, and I see that Kim in the chat has written, IANA called it a revocation. Do we have any more comments on this subject or any questions? Do we have any more discussion over additional topics to be included, which is the subject of topic item 5? Hearing nothing, I think we've been working at a good pace so far. I think unless there's anything further on what we've already discussed, we've reached any other business. Does anybody have an item for any other business? Perhaps you could put your hand up if you do. I see one from Eberhard. Just before I go to Eberhard, is there anybody else who'd like to be included under AOB? Okay, Eberhard, you have the floor. And I think you must be on mute.
Sorry. I have a question with regard to quorum. I forgot to mention at the first part, so that I'm raising it now. There will be occasions where the working group will not raise enough members for the phone call. How do we handle a quorum type of situation? At the FOI, we have on occasion decided the day before or something we are not going to call. There is too many apologies. Do we have a threshold, or do you leave this to the chair, vice chair, and issue manager?
I think that's a question for everybody except the chair, the vice chair, and the issue manager. Has anybody got any comments?
This is Bart. So if you look at the charter itself, it doesn't talk about it, and it doesn't say, if you look at the working group rules of the CCNSO, it doesn't talk about quorum itself. That's an internal rule for the working group. So it's up to the members and others to decide whether you think a quorum is needed and how you want to handle it.
Yeah, I have a comment from Stephen in the chat. I also just noticed a comment from Patricio about the previous item, so I just draw your attention to that. Stephen says, can we do what we did informally with the FOI working group? And I presume by that it means assess the day before if there's a lot of apologies and then defer the call. My own feeling is that we don't need a formal quorum because we are not taking board level decisions here. We're debating and discussing and developing. But obviously, clearly, if there are a majority of members who can't make it to a particular meeting, it would make sense to exercise our scheduling discretion and defer or abbreviate the call. If people are happy with that, that's what I propose to go forward with, unless we experience problems with that mechanism. See no hands up. I see no comments to that. Any other business? If I don't hear anything, I'll pass it over to, I think this is probably Bart, is it you, for talking about next meetings?
First, Eberhard has raised his hand.
Oh, I missed that one. I blinked. Eberhard, go ahead.
So we raise this, we read this quorum thing again at the next meeting before we make a final decision, like in every other thing that we do, ne?
Agree.
Yeah, what we'll do, Eberhard, I don't know if it's helpful, we'll make a summary, as you can see, Joke's doing the notes, say include this in the rules of engagement, the internal rules of engagement, so we can put it up on the screen on the next meeting.
Excellent. My point is that I don't want anybody later to think that we're making decisions on the fly. It's much easier if we are predictable on this, and then everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Bart, do you want to just speak to the last item on the agenda?
Yeah, next meetings as discussed on the first call. Before the Johannesburg meeting and in the Johannesburg meeting, the working group agreed to have a call every 2 weeks and to rotate the time frame so everybody at least suffers as much as others. So there will be a rotational basis of 6 hours, I believe. The next call will be in 3 weeks, but that will be, that might be one of those occasions where we'll be right in the middle of, holiday season in the Northern Hemisphere and others. So that would be the 3rd of August, and that would be, I believe, at 1800 hours UTC. And I know that at least, say, one of the co-chair or the vice chair will not be available, nor will I. So it's up to you whether you want to do the 3rd of October or you want to move forward to the 17th, deferring that one, knowing of the holiday season.
I think that's possibly something we can discuss with the wider group on the email list, do you think, Bart?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Hey, Bart.
I'll leave you to send out an appropriate email.
Yeah.
I can't participate because I'm on a conference in Cape Town, but that should not be taken as this meeting should be postponed. I will be able to contribute on the email list beforehand, and we will I will be able to read what is being scripted. So feel free not to make a decision depending on my availability. On the other hand, if the issue manager is also not available, maybe we should postpone it by at least a week or whenever we are all available. The membership should decide this in the end.
Yeah. So we go back to the, say, in principle, it's the 2 weeks framework, and we'll get back to you with respect to the chair. We'll get back to you with respect to the 3rd of August meeting. and I will circulate the agenda beforehand as well. And the and if you could indicate whether, and this is more for those who haven't attended this call, if you could indicate and ask for this, Nigel, whether people will attend the meeting, give an indication, that would be helpful as well, whether or not to defer the meeting.
Indeed. I think we have got, if you're also not available, we have got probably a mild presumption that we may be deferring this. But as I said, I think if you can send out the appropriate email and we discuss it on the list, that's probably the best bet.
Yeah.
Okay. Stephen's suggesting, would a doodle poll be useful for this question? So maybe that's something to consider.
No, we can, that's fine. But it's a, we'll stick, say, I suggest not to defer it to the 10th. But if you do it, say, just cancel the meeting and go to the 17th, because that's the schedule we agreed upon.
Okay, so we'll do this on the email list. Well, unless anybody has anything else, I'd like to thank everybody for a very productive meeting so far. I'm beginning to get a confident and good feeling that we're going to achieve something that's going to stand the test of time, just as we've done with the FOI. So thank you all very much. And unless, Bart, you have anything else at all, I think we adjourn the meeting.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.